its advertisers or affiliates.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for this hour, it's going to be the views of Randy Engel. And I first ran into Randy about, 8 years or so ago, when I heard a series of tapes he had done with a Dr. Dunnigan, who was a pediatrician up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I was so taken with what she had done that I contacted Dr. Dunnigan and did an interview with him myself, because I wanted to know if this incredible story was really true. And after talking to Dr. Dunnigan, I was convinced it was. And this is an important part of the puzzle. And so Randy was kind enough to let us reproduce the tapes, and now we have a 4-tape set called The New Order of the Barbarians. And with that as a background, I'm going to let Randy come on and tell you what this is really all about. Good evening, Randy. Thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, I'm just delighted to be with you again.
Well, why don't you pick up and tell our listeners the story?
Yeah, let me first set the scene. The date is March 20th, 1969. The place is Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's a place where the lecture takes place actually is the Le Mans, which is a very exclusive restaurant in Pittsburgh, and it's the annual meeting of the Pittsburgh Pediatric Society. And there are about 80 members present. And the keynote speaker is a Dr. Richard Day, who figured quite prominently in pediatrics at the time. He had taught pediatrics at the University of Pittsburgh from 1959 to 1964. But his real call to fame, that is the Dr. Day's call to fame, was that he was the one of the former national medical directors of Planned Parenthood. And as it turns out, in this audience was a young pediatrician by the name of Dr. Lawrence Dunnigan. And he was there along with his compatriots, and they thought for sure he was going to talk on some aspect of pediatrics. As it turned out, the title of his speech was Family Planning, Infant Mortality, Gene Frequency, Abortion, and Other Considerations. Well, it was those other considerations that really were the key to his talk. The talk lasted about 2.5 hours. Now, mind you, this is 2.5 hours after the social hour that they had prior to the meeting, and then, of course, a heavy dinner, so that I'm not sure how alert the majority of those physicians were that evening when they heard the talk. But Dr. Dunnigan was, if you ever, well, you did meet him, then you know how bright and alert he is. And so as it turned out, that talk, the name given to that talk, really didn't give a clue as to actually what he was going to talk about. And as it turned out, he centered his talk on what he called the New World System. Most of us know it by the New World Order, but he called it the New World System.
I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts right there. We'll be right back.
Sure.
All right, you picked the story up.
Well, let's see. He said he was going to talk about this New World System. And he said that the system was already in place. Now, mind you, he's talking about 1969. He said the system was already in place and no one could stop it. And so his talk really was on what were the implications for all Americans as a result of this incorporation of this New World System. Luckily for posterity, when Dr. Day asked that all recorders be turned off, the rascal that Dr. Dunnigan was, he grabbed a handful of paper napkins and a pen, and he started taking all these notes. And the tapes called The New Order of Barbarians is a series of four tapes, and it's essentially a record of what Dr. Dunnigan heard that day, what Dr. Day talked about on that fateful night of March in 1969. And it also includes, of course, my lengthy interview with Dr. Dunnigan 20 years after the fact, and also your interview with Dr. Dunnigan.
All right. That's really one of the most important things that we have, because here's a firsthand account of an insider, a man who had actually heard a member of a group, and I believe Dr. Day referred to this group as the Order, that the Order had planned for humanity. But it's not simply we want to make a better world. It was really just exactly the opposite. The world we're going to create is a nightmare. And it was almost as if Dr. Day wished something could be done to stop it, but obviously nothing was going to be done. So what were some of the things that he said?
Well, before he went into the description of very specific details, Dr. Day laid out certain basic principles that would be characteristic of this new system. And I'm going to highlight three. There were others, but I think there were three that were probably most important. He said the key to the new system would be change, and it would be change for change's sake. That the people would be conditioned to accept change, and that they would come to realize that there was really nothing permanent. And the effect of this constant change would be to discourage traditional roots, especially with regard to religion and family life, ethics and morals.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, Dr. Stan and Randy is telling what was said that fateful day back in March of 1969. Dr. Day was describing a new world system. He said it was in place, nothing could be done to stop it, and of course people should really understand what was about to happen. He said that there was going to be change for change's sake. And people would be conditioned to accept change. They wouldn't understand necessarily what was happening. They'd be confused, but the world was going to change and change dramatically, and the people were just going to accept this without a question. Pick the story up there, Randy.
Well, in addition to this constant change, he said that there would be... new changes were required in the system, the basic principle would be that if you want to influence people in a particular direction, it was necessary to produce an ostensible reason rather than the real reason for the action. For example, you want to promote abortion, you don't talk about the right to kill your baby. What you do is you talk about reproductive rights. if you want to promote homosexuality, you don't talk in terms of vice or perversion. You talk in terms of civil rights. So what he was basically saying is that people generally would be so easily manipulated, especially by the mass media, into accepting reasons for actions that were not true, but they would accept them because it was easier to accept them than perhaps to fight them. So that was another principle. And the third very important aspect of his talk, and much of his talk centered on this, was the concept that, you know, people talk about population control, and they may think about abortion, they may think about euthanasia at the other end of the age spectrum, they may think about immigration and so forth. But Dr. Day made it very clear that when he was talking about population control, it was the manipulation of every aspect of human endeavor. And in this case, the controllers, I call them the new barbarians. He said that this was an elite group of men, and he said if their names were known or said, they probably wouldn't be recognized by the general population. He said they're generally not in high places in government, but rather this elite group controls those who govern, the implication being that elected officials from the president down take their marching orders from men behind the scenes and not really the American voter. And that's why I think it is that many Americans have expressed the opinion that it really doesn't matter which party you're going to vote for. You're going to get the same things are going to come through. And in a sense, that's true, because the elite group found out early that if you want to control the political system in the United States, you have to control both parties. You can't just control one. And they do. And they are major forces in both parties. So those actually were the three basic principles that he set. And then, of course, he went into his details on this new world system. And as I said, the cornerstone of the new world system would be population control. And, of course, that brought us down to the issue of the so-called sexual revolution. And Dr. Day described it in exquisite detail, considering that he was talking in 1969. The two basic principles he talked about with regard to the sexual revolution was that there would be sex without reproduction and reproduction without sex. Now, sex without reproduction, he centered his talk there on issues of contraception, which he said would be promoted on a mass scale, and the contraception usually would fail at some point, so it had to be backed up by abortion and sterilization. And he said that there would be greater sexual activity, more sexual activity, especially among the young, but it would be sexual activity that was divorced from producing babies. So therefore, that's why we had to have contraception backed up by abortion and sterilization. Then he talked about reproduction without sex. And of course, there he was talking about the in vitro fertilization, artificial insemination, prenatal diagnosis, because people would not be having more than one and two children, and they would not want to be bothered with any handicapped child. Therefore, prenatal diagnosis would be a tool by which one would eliminate the handicap in utero, and therefore eliminate the any handicapped child. The way in which this revolution, sexual revolution, would be promoted, throughout the talk, he said he kind of poo-pooed those who were elderly and set in their ways, and he put much emphasis on the up-and-coming generation. And this was so when he was talking about the sexual revolution. He said that the vehicle for the transmission of all these concepts would be sex instruction, which would be introduced in all the schools. And, of course, now he was talking in 1969, but as I document in a number of my books on the history of the sex instruction movement in the United States, by 1966, Catholic schools, for example, already had incorporated explicit sex education programs or sex instruction programs in their classes. And the reason I don't use the word education is that these programs are really not about education. Up until really modern times, the only people who really needed explicit professional sex instruction were the obstetrician and members of the police department and the vice squad and so forth. The idea that people had to be instructed in sex was a rather hilarious notion. But the New World System made sure that that attitude changed, and so they began what I call sexual conditioning, and they used the public schools and then the parochial schools and private schools to increase sexual activity across the board, to increase homosexuality, to increase promiscuity, because these are the things that are going to move this New World System forward.
And of course, I can remember the talking about how, you know, if a couple had a 12 or 13 year old daughter was pregnant, and of course they were against abortion, but you know, what were they going to do? Were they going to let her destroy her life? They would have their daughter have an abortion, and then of course they would be forced then into the pro-abortion camp.
He thought that he wasn't sad that they were going. He acknowledged with birth control, with the sex instruction in schools, stimulating sexual activity among the young, there was going to be a lot more of out-of-wedlock pregnancies. But he said that wasn't all bad, because the more people involved in abortion, providing abortion, having children who had abortions, the more accustomed they would become to accepting abortion. So for all these activities, they seem to come up with the positive side. So the positive side of all this was that there'd be more abortions, but that would be good because then abortions would be more readily accepted.
And so everything was how you were going to manipulate the people. It was really, the whole thing was ingenious.
Yeah, and I think one of the most startling statements was, and he made it in, now consider this, March 20th, 1969, Dr. Day, former medical director of Planned Parenthood, said that homosexuals would be given permission to act out. That was in late March, and sure enough, on June 18th, 3 months later, we had the Stonewall riots, which of course sparked the so-called homosexual revolution around the world. So it's kind of frightening that this New World System and those who are promoting it have such power that they can manipulate major events around the world, and one of them, of course, was the promotion of homosexuality. And in conjunction with that, the reader, the listener might say, "Well, I don't think that Dr. Day said that, or I don't think that's possible. One could predict that." But ironically, that very same year, 1969, Planned Parenthood and Rockefeller's Population Council issued a memo, and the title of the memo was "Methods of Population Control," And on the left-hand side, I still have that memo pasted on my bulletin board from that year. Among the methods of population control listed was homosexuality as a means of reducing population. So, you know, this isn't something that Dr. Dunnigan or myself or you, you know, drew out of a hat.
Hold, please hold. We'll be back in just a minute. Well, Dr. Stan, I guess is Randy Engel, and Randy is just saying that there was a memo that was circulated among.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
At the end of life, to have people simply have a little celebration and then take a demise pill and then go off to die. After all, they were old, they were no longer productive, and so they would have a special pill you'd take, and that would kill you, and everybody should be very happy to do that. And so this whole idea of this elite determining who would live and who would die, and when you would die, was all to be laid out in this wonderful organized society. One of the things I remember so vividly was his talking about the fact that there were treatments for cancer that was already available then in 1969 that would be suppressed and kept locked in the basement of the Rockefeller Foundation, and his remark that people are going to have to die anyway, they might as well die of cancer. People were going to die anyway, they might as well die of cancer. And it's hard to imagine that anybody could feel that way, and yet today we know that, well, back at the beginning of the last century, or the 20th century, cancer was one about three in every 100. Today it's 50 in every 100. We spent billions and billions and billions of dollars in a war on cancer, and we're losing the war. And the question is, are we losing it accidentally, or is there an agenda to actually prevent the effects of treatments for cancer that were available back in 1969 and long before? Pick the story up there, Randy.
Yes, I found that absolutely amazing. Also, considering the fact that among the pediatricians in the audience were those who were treating childhood cancers, and to have someone stand up and say that many of the cures already exist, and but they weren't being released because if people are going to die, they might as well die of cancer as of anyone else. But it was, well, what amazed me is that someone, you know, that the audience must have been at that point in a real lethargic state, because later, after the talk was over, Dr. Dunnigan was kind of comparing the notes he had written with some of his friends, and he said, "Hey, do you remember when Dr. Say so-and-so, you know, that was really insulting to doctors and so forth?" And they'd say, "Oh, is that what he said?" So I think the lack of reaction from the audience, with the exception of perhaps Dr. Dunnigan, who was really busy taking notes there, I found that also amazing. But he did mention and spent quite a bit of time talking about what was going to happen to medicine, and you would think that the doctors in the audience would be all ears on that point. And he said that the doctor would no longer be responsible for the patient. He would be now become an instrument of the state, and he would take orders from the state, and insurance companies would dictate pretty much the who got treatments and who got what kind of treatments they got. Now, at that time, in 1969, insurance was not generally attached to the workplace, but that rapidly changed. So, by 1980 and into the 90s and so forth, if you didn't have insurance, largely through the workplace, you were really going to be up a creek, because insurance cost... the whole insurance company and the whole insurance billing, which is essentially fraudulent billing, drove up the medical fees up to such a point that if you didn't have insurance, you would have a very difficult time paying these artificially hiked up bills. So that was one aspect of the medical scene. And then Dr. Day discussed the new diseases. He said that they would be introduced. Now, when he used the word introduced, presumably that meant that these would be manufactured in the laboratory and then released under certain circumstances. And I can remember Dr. Dunnigan saying The first time he heard of AIDS, the first thing that really popped into his mind was, is this one of the diseases that Dr. Day was talking about? So,
hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with Randy Engel. All right, go right ahead, Randy. And you were just saying that Dunnigan had actually commented the first time he'd heard that. He wondered, when he heard of AIDS for the first time,
yes.
His thought was, is this one of the diseases they created? And what's really so interesting in the sequence of events, talk he described was in March of 69. Now, of course, Dr. Dunnigan had no way of knowing that either in June or July of that year, Dr. Donald MacArthur would go before the House Appropriations Committee on Military Affairs and request $10 million to create a new disease for which there'd be no immune response, which was really describing the AIDS virus. And then said some people said, you know, we really shouldn't be doing this because it would be a new means of mass killing. Oh, we want to go ahead and produce this disease because we want to see if it can be done. So, I mean, it was just a few months later the Army was requesting the money for this terrible, dreadful disease for which there was no immune response, or like the acquired immune deficiency syndrome. Mm-hmm. Right ahead.
Well, I think most of your listeners would be interested to hear what Dr. Day had to say about religion. Here, when he was talking about religion, that whole theme of constant change would come into play. He said that the old religions had to go, and he specifically mentioned the Roman Catholic religion, because he said once the Roman Catholic religion was brought down, that the others would follow. And here he was saying that religions like the Catholic religion, for example, there was dogma and there was doctrine, and people were expected to act according to the morals and the faith. But he said that all that had to go. He said that there's going to be a new world religion. And what it would do is it would give people that wonderful little fuzzy feel-good feeling, but it would be devoid of dogma and doctrine and morals. It would just make people feel good, because he said, after all, things that make people feel good, well, there's certainly a place for them, but not in the sense that there would be a place for any dogma and doctrine. And now, when
hold that thought right there, please. Okay. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and one of the things that Dr. Day said was really so revealing. He was talking about religion, and he said that religion would have to go. One of the most important things was to do away with the Catholic Church. What we wanted was a religion that would make people feel good, but that it would have no doctrine, it would have no dogma, it would have no real significance, it would just make people feel good about themselves. And go right ahead, Randy.
Yeah, now when Dr. Dunnigan said, when he heard that, he being a Roman Catholic said, oh, that's a lot of hooey. You're not going to change the church, and so forth. And, of course, by 1969, by the time Day gave his speech, there was already major changes in the Mass, so many changes that it became, the traditional Latin Mass became almost totally unrecognizable. There were changes being made in the Bible, including those changes made to accommodate homosexuality. So all these, in fact, were in place, as Dr. Day said. In addition to religion, Dr. Day spent considerable time also as I said, the emphasis of the new system would be on youth. And he said in terms of new education that children would probably be going to school longer, but they would be learning less. In other words, it was he admitted that there'd be a general dumbing down of students, except for those students who had been selected to advance and were put on the fast track. And when you listen to the tapes, I think this was section on education was probably something that I think every parent should hear, because parents out there are wondering, especially those who have who are not homeschooling, have children in public schools and even parochial schools. Why is it that the SAT standards have to be lowered? And it's because, of course, there is a general dumbing down of students, and everyone from grade school teachers to college professors acknowledge that fact. He also, there were a lot of things having to do with social aspects of living. He said, for example, that there would be gambling, that government would get into gambling. And I think here he was talking about the lottery. And he said government would be more involved in gambling. As far as drug use goes, this was another one of his disturbing remarks. He said that the drug use had its function in that it turned urban areas into jungles, so that drug use was influential in relationship to the increasing the law of the jungle as it pertained to the ghetto areas. So that was, you know, part of his little philosophy takeoff there. Here's an interesting thing. As I said, all aspects of life he discussed. And the area that I thought was particularly interesting, I'm not a native Pittsburgher, but we had moved here into Pittsburgh in 1961. And when we moved here, Pittsburgh was Steel City. When you drove along the parkway, all you could see for miles and miles were the smokestacks of the great steel mills. Well, in 1969, Day said that America as a nation was no longer going to be an industrial power, that they had now, this country had been designated as a service rather than an industrial nation, and it was necessary to move the heavy industry, just send the heavy industry abroad. And he put that within the context of the environment. He said, we've already suffered enough environmental damage from being an industrial company country, and it was about time that you know, we spread the misery around and let the third world countries absorb some of the cost of industrialization. And sure enough, he said the Pittsburgh would become not only would the nation become a service nation, but the city of Pittsburgh would become a service city. And today, as you go along the parkway, all the major steel mills of Pittsburgh are closed. They've all been dismantled except for some skeleton sites. And Pittsburgh today, instead of being called Steel City, it's called Service City. So he was right on the button on that area. And within the context of nationalism and internationalism, he frequently pointed out that people had to stop thinking of themselves as Americans or Frenchmen or Italians. Rather, they had to think of themselves now that they were now citizens of the world, and that this would facilitate the new world system and make it easier to accept. Then he hit the area of entertainment. He said that sex and violence would become a greater and integral part of entertainment. And he used the term ECR. And if you realize, in 1969, nobody knew what a VCR was. I'm sure there were those in the production field who might have thought, you know, that was on the drawing board, up and coming. But he talked about there would be increase in violence, and that violence would be introduced into the home via video games and VCRs. And that also included, he included in that violence, sexual violence. He said the pornography would be, you didn't have to go out to the tawdry areas of the seedy areas of the city to get porn. You could have it brought right into your home. And that he also said that you would see people doing everything imaginable and unimaginable on this in the new porn that would take off. With regard to the issue of violence, he said that people would get so adjusted and so acclimated to seeing violence that when it actually occurred, they would almost be petrified and not take any action. They would be passive. And I think we've seen some of this in the mass shootings that have taken place recently. It seems that people do not, that they're watching it, and it's perhaps they're thinking in their minds, this is not real, this is some kind of video game or something, this man who's shooting down all these people, this isn't real. But it is real, and it's taking place today. Another aspect of entertainment, he talked about music, changes in music. Mom and Dad would no longer share the same taste in music. There would be musical lyrics that would be very, very sexually explicit, and these would be targeted for the young. In terms of the young, young people would be encouraged to wear sexually explicit clothing. And here's a doctor, and yet he's talking about all these new fashion accessories. He said, for example, jeans would be, and here I'm J-E-A-N-S, not G-E-N-E-S. Jeans would be redesigned, and they would be cut so that they would be very tight fitting. And the creases in the jeans would act as arrows. Whenever you saw the crease, it would direct your attention, if you were looking at a man or a woman, to specific parts of the anatomy. And so he had his little witticism about dress and clothing. And finally, among the last things he talked about was that terrorism would increase worldwide. He said he wasn't sure if there would be terrorism in the United States, but if the New World System wasn't really moving quickly, he thought that there might be a couple of instances introduced in the United States of terrorism, and that a little bit of terror would go a long way. And Americans then would be willing to relinquish their freedom for security. And, you know, what he had in mind, I'm not sure, but I can bet you that everyone listening to this program is thinking, of course, 9/11.
Well, I could remember several things he said. He talked about what they were going to do with athletes, professional athletes. And they were going to get paid fabulous salaries. Now, in 1969, athletes were well paid. But, you know, recently we're finding some pitchers, I think Roger Clemens, $20 or $30 million for pitching for 1 year. Then he talked about automobiles, how we would shift the value or the excellence of car production to Japan and to other countries, but specifically to Japan. And how Japan then would become the predominant automaker. Because
yeah.
Their cars mm-hmm. would be so much better than American cars. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do, because he said that the way they would work it, I mean, he had a kind of a secret thing that, you know, in order to achieve something, you would do something. And in relationship to Americans being disgusted with the way American cars would be built, He said that they would deliberately leave, let's say, an appendage loose or something, so it would fall off, and immediately the person would say, they just don't make American cars like they used to. And it would be, this would be a deliberate thing. And sure enough, at the time, I don't think in 1969 there were many Japanese cars in the United States, but of course that changed, and it changed rather rapidly once things were set in motion.
And just this last year, Toyota became the largest automobile manufacturer in the entire world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had a great deal to say. You know, he was talking about industry and so forth, and naturally he'd come up to the issue of finances. And he said that the credit card, of course, would replace cash, and almost all transactions would be digital transactions, so that we really wouldn't, most of us would not be handling a lot of cold hard cash. It'd be electronic, and it would be easy to manipulate electronic finances and so forth. So, Dr. Stan, it was as if he had this amazing crystal ball, and I found it the first time I heard the tapes. Dr. Dunnigan had asked me to come over to his office. He said, are you interested in learning a little bit more about this New World Order? And I said, yeah. He said, well, I've got some tapes that I think you might be interested in. And he gave them to me, and I remember the very day that he gave them to me, and I plugged the little cassettes in, and I was trying, you know, I was on the road there, and it took me almost an hour or so to get home. And I remember how difficult it was to drive and to hear what Dr. Dunnigan was saying about this new world system. I mean, every time I heard a shocker, it was almost like I had to really control that steering wheel. And I think that's going to be the reaction of your listeners when they listen to this it just incredible scenario. They'll fill in the empty pieces. I think, you know, for each individual, there'll be certain aspects of the day tape that'll really strike home. I think for the steel workers, I think for parents, anyone will be fascinated to know that so many of these changes which have taken place, most of them not for the good of the country and certainly not for the good of the American people, that these actually had been planned a long time ago. And when we say planned, it's not that they're planned in exact detail. It's just the pictures are painted in broad strokes. America would not be an industrial nation anymore. She would be a service nation. Those kind of broad areas with the specifics left to be worked out.
All right, well, now we're almost out of time. The four tape set is called The New Order of the Barbarians, and this is the only actual tape set that we have a transcript on, at least a large part of it. And we'll tell you a little later how you can get that. But before we go any further, Randy, I want you to get your webpage out, because you have a ministry, a pro-life ministry. And how can people get in touch with you?
Well, if they'd like to find out more about the tapes, not so much in ordering the tapes, I think they should be ordered from Radio Liberty, but if they're just interested in questions about Dr. Day's talk, they can call our hotline, which is area code 724-327-7379. I have written a number of books, and if they want to visit the website and also take a look at a detailed biography of myself, they can visit www.riteofsodomy, that's R-I-T-E, of sodomy.com. And that unusual name happens to be my latest book.
All right, I'll give that telephone number one more time.
All right, that's 724. That's the area code for Pittsburgh. And the number is 724-327-7379.
And Randy has been a dedicated worker in the trenches for a long period of time in the pro-life field, and certainly trying to expose what's going on. You are a traditional Catholic, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
All right, fine. So when she speaks about what's going on in the Catholic Church, it's not with animosity, but with deep concern about what's happening to the foundation of her faith.
That's
and
right.
I would tell her that the book, The Rite of Sodomy, R-I-T-E, it's almost 1,000 pages.
Well, it's 1,300 pages, 13. Actually. It's a description of these changes that Dave was talking about are described in absolute detail in the book.
And, of course, there is an organized effort to destroy Christianity, the Catholic Church, the Protestant Church, Christianity as a whole. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, another fascinating program. Randy, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us tonight.
Well, I think the thing that I'd like to say, and I haven't had a chance to say that yet, is that I believe in God, and I believe that He is still in charge of the world. So when we talk about this new world order or something, they may fantasize that they are in total control, but in fact God is still in control. And those of us who recognize that salvation lies in Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior, we've got to hold fast to our faith and live and act as Christians and do whatever we can to fight this so-called new world system. There is a whole list of things that come to mind about how we fight the system, but I think each individual, or as the groups of individuals coming together, when they listen to these tapes, I don't have to tell them, what the opposition can do, what we as the opposition can do. The thoughts will immediately come to mind, and there's something I think that everyone can do to oppose this new world system.
Well, I'm sure there is. Of course, we're already under attack from all sides. This effort to do away with the sovereignty of our nation, open borders, amnesty for illegal immigrants, part of the new world system, senseless wars fought in, whether it would be in Africa, or whether it would be in the Near East, or in the Far East, or in Vietnam, or in Korea, or they're all part of this move to bring about a world government. But with that, and I think it's so vividly brought up by Dr. Dave, is the importance of doing away with traditional Christianity. Now, it's not just traditional Christianity. They want to do away with the Jewish faith. They want to do away with the Muslim faith. They want to do away with all faiths and bring about a new world religion. I thought that was very vividly brought out.
Yes, he made that point very strongly. And as I said, when Dr. Dunnigan originally heard that, he said, "Oh, it's not going to happen to my faith." And yes. Lo and behold, it did.
It's happening to all faiths, because religion is the very core of society. Destroy the core of a society, you destroy the society. Randy, it's been another fascinating evening. Thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan, for inviting me.
Good night.
God bless.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you've enjoyed our conversation with Randy Engel. And the four-tape set is available from Radio Liberty. It's called The New Order of the Barbarians. You can get it with or without the transcript. But, you know, if you can possibly get the transcript, it is fascinating because you can read it and you can reread it and you can read it again and you learn something each time. And, of course, together with all the other things that we have, you begin to see the pattern. We have the National Security Study Memorandum 200, NSSM, that was released 5 years later in 1974 over the name of Henry Kissinger, that says the basis of American foreign policy is population control. We do have the complete text of Dr. MacArthur's testimony there in 1969 before the House Appropriations Committee, rather long and extensive. We asked for $10 million to create a new disease for which there's no immune response, a new method of mass killing. There really are people who look at the world differently than you and I do. It's important you understand it. It's important that you understand that behind all of this are powerful, demonic spiritual forces. And if you do not understand them, you need to either read my book or watch the DVD or video, The Brotherhood of Darkness. All of these things can be obtained. If you like more information how to get them or suggested donations, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. My talk on Forbidden Secret, and it comes with a syllabus. My talk on population control. My talk on Nandere called genocide, or the more elaborate, lengthy session called planned population reduction. I mean, do you think it's just accidental that they accidentally banned DDT, the safest pesticide ever known, or I should say insecticide, ever known to man? And now, of course, in 2007, why they said, you know, it's really not that dangerous. It's all right to spray rooms with that, and we could cut back on the incidence of malaria in Africa, 85%, 90%. And in the intervening 33 years since 1973, why almost 100 million people have died unnecessarily, most of them African children. Do you think it was just an accident that in Africa, in places like Botswana, why 46% of the pregnant women are infected with HIV and they're all going to die? And if that's a failed public health policy, wouldn't you change the public health policy? If it was a genocidal policy, you'd continue just what you're doing. And you know what? They're continuing the same policy. I wonder why. You must understand that there are people who look at the world through entirely different eyes. You can read their publications in our Sustainable Development Syllabus, where we actually have reviewed the global the Global Biodiversity Assessment report that came out of the Second Earth Summit, a product of Al Gore and Prince Charles and the leading, of course, economists and bankers and financiers. It all was planned in 1991 on Prince Charles' good ship, the Britannia, the royal yacht, where the leaders of the world, and I believe John Kerry was there, I know Al Gore was there, and they got together and laid out this plan for massive population control, sustainable development, Agenda 21. There are too many people in the world. We're going to have to come up with alternatives. We'll destroy industrialized society with the Kyoto Protocol, the Desertification Treaty, the Global Biodiversity Treaty. All of them were a direct result of that meeting. They planned our future. If you haven't read the plan, you need, of course, to get the Earth Charter. It's in the Sustainable Development Syllabus. And we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion. That'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And this evening our guest is Arthur Bernclough from the Veterans for Constitutional Rights. And Arthur, if I would describe as an activist who's trying to help veterans get through the intentionally lengthy and confusing program so they can get veterans' rights. We send our young men off to fight and bleed and suffer and die in foreign countries and tell them how brave they are. When they come home, we treat them like we never knew them. And there's been an organized effort for many years to block veterans from receiving benefits, to delay their receiving benefits for many years, to classify them as psychological problems or as post-traumatic stress. Many times they're used as guinea pigs, and they will have serious after effects. Certainly the Agent Orange that was used during the Vietnam War was an example of that. We know they gave our troops experimental vaccines after the Second World War, and many of them developed epilepsy and all sorts of complications. They were used as guinea pigs for the nuclear explosions, evaluating the danger of nuclear explosions. We know that they were given experimental vaccines during the First Gulf War, and that this certainly plays at least a part in the Gulf War syndrome. We know that at least 100,000, probably closer to 150,000 veterans of Gulf War I were exposed to sarin gas intentionally. We intentionally blew up the bunkers that contained sarin and other poison gases, and those people in line with the plume, many of them beginning to develop secondary metal problems, degenerative problems of their brains today. We know that today they're using depleted uranium over there, and depleted uranium will destroy the lives of many of the young men over there. And if you doubt that, we carry a DVD called Beyond Treason. Along with the DVD, you get a CD-ROM that contains thousands of pages of government documents about what they know how poisonous the depleted uranium is, because it's really not depleted at all. It's pure uranium, 238, and once it gets into your system, you'll almost never be able to get it out. And the terrible effect it's having on the children and the women and the civilians in Iraq, and one day it may well be having an effect on the people here in this country. There really are people who will look at the world through a different lens of history. Well, Arthur Bernclough, thank you so very much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, it's always a pleasure to work with you.
All right, well, tell us about some of the things that you've uncovered, because our veterans are always under attack. They're doing everything they can. Although they keep talking about they want to help them, there's really an organized effort to prevent them from getting their benefits. Go ahead.
Well, we've had some bad administrations, but the current one now is the most anti-veteran administration I've ever seen in my life, and I've been through quite a few of these administrations. And being a veterans advocate, I hear all stories of all kinds, and surprisingly, most of them are true. But
hold that thought. We'll be right back. Arthur, go right ahead.
The things that are happening today, they seem to be escalating into worse and worse situations. We had a situation previously where Congress finally passed a law to give us attorneys, and then we had the largest veterans organization, the Disabled American Veterans, do everything they can through two North Dakota senators, Senator Conrad and Senator Dorgan, to try to rescind that law. And they did put a hold on it. They put a hold on that law for 180 days. The law was passed December 22nd and signed into law by President Bush. And they put a hold on that until June 22nd, which has just arrived about 6 minutes ago. And so far, they have not rescinded that law. And if they don't rescind it by today, that law is law, and a veteran has got a right to contact an attorney and get representation for his claim. And in 75 years' existence of the VA, veterans have never been allowed to have attorneys. And that's going to change things here quite a bit. But there's always more and more outrageous things coming out of the VA. Now, this came from the Associated Press with the byline from Hope Yen. And this is Washington, Associated Press. Months after a politically embarrassing $1.3 billion shortfall that put veterans' health care in peril, the veterans affairs officials involved in the follow-up got hefty bonuses ranging from $33,000 up to $42,000. A list of the bonuses to senior career officials at the Veterans Affairs Department in 2006, obtained by the Associated Press, documents a generous package of more than $3.8 million in payments by a financially strapped agency, the VA, straining to help care for thousands of injured veterans returning home from Iraq and Afghanistan. Among those receiving payments were a deputy assistant secretary and several regional directors who crafted the VA's flawed budget for 2005 based on misleading accounting. They received performance payments up to $33,000 each, a figure equal to about 20% of their annual salaries. Also receiving top bonuses were the deputy and undersecretary for benefits, who helps manage a disability claims system that has a backlog of cases and delays averaging 177 days.
Well, that's all right there, Arthur. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Arthur is saying that he's reading from an article that the high officials in the Veterans Administration, which is really strapped because it doesn't have enough money to take care of the veterans, high officials have been given bonus awards, many of them up to 20% of their salaries. And these are the people who are doing the worst job. These are the people who are depriving our veterans of their benefits. These are the people who are writing budgets that have no basis at all in reality. And these people are really conspiring against our veterans getting their benefits. And how are they treated? Are they punished? No. Are they giving their bonuses? Go right ahead, Arthur.
Well, these people have been paying each other bonuses that deny claims for years and years, and this always goes on in the VA, that they pay each other bonuses that deny claims. Now, also receiving a top bonus was the Deputy Secretary for Benefits, who helps manage a disability claim system and has a backlog of cases and delays averaging 177 days in getting benefits to injured veterans. Now, the VA has been claiming they are 200,000 to 400,000 cases behind. And Congressman Hall of New York says, until you pare that down to 100,000 cases behind, we don't want any more bonuses given out. Congressman Hall is going to fight against the bonuses. But I'm in total favor of taking these bonuses. And the ones who have received the bonuses this year for last year, I'm in favor of taking these bonuses away from these people. Because we looked into the background of this to see how many cases are actually being held up. And where the government is claiming between 200,000 and 400,000, we get a number out of the VA of 770,000 cases that are backlogged. Now, they continually lie to the press, they lie to the public, they lie to everybody. Lying is a way of life with this government agency. And The bonuses were awarded even after government investigators had determined that the VA repeatedly miscalculated, if not deliberately misled, taxpayers with questionable methods used to justify Bush administration cuts to health care amid a burgeoning Iraq war. And don't forget, a little over a year and a half ago, Arthur Anderson auditors were put out of business by the government, and the VA immediately hired 104 of these people for executives to the VA, and they found a home in the VA, the Arthur Anderson auditors. If anyone has forgotten, this is Arthur Anderson auditors of Enron fame. Now, the VA claims the payments are necessary to retain hard-working career officials, and several VA watchdog groups questioned the practice. They cited short staffing and underfunding at VA clinics that have become particularly evident after recent disclosures of shoddy outpatient treatment of injured troops at Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington. And hundreds of thousands of our veterans remain homeless every day, and hundreds of thousands more veterans wait 6 months or more for VA disability claim decisions. And this was said by Paul Sullivan, the executive director of Veterans for Common Sense. The lavish amounts of VA bonus cash would be better spent on a robust plan to cut VA red tape. Senator Daniel Akaka, the current chairman of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, said the payments pointed to an improper entitlement for the most centrally placed or well-connected staff. Seeking an explanation from Secretary Jim Nicholson of the VA, Akaka also asked the department to outline steps to address disparities in which Washington-based senior officials got higher payments than their counterparts elsewhere. Awards should be determined according to performance, said Akaka, Democrat of Hawaii. I am concerned by this generous pat on the back for those who have failed to ensure that their budget requests accurately reflected the VA's needs. A VA spokesman, Matt Burns, said the department was reviewing Akaka's request. Burns contended that many of the senior officials had been with the department for years with an expertise that could not be replicated immediately if they were to leave for the more profitable private sector. What a lot of twaddle. Rewarding knowledgeable and professional career public servants is entirely appropriate, he said. The importance of retaining committed career leaders in any government organization cannot be overstated. Boy, they can really pile it on in Washington, can't they? In 2006, the VA officials receiving top bonuses included Rita Reed, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Budget, and William Feely, a former VA network director who is now Deputy Undersecretary for Health and Operations and Management. And we name all the names here. Also receiving $33,000 was Ronald Almond, the Deputy Undersecretary for Benefits, who helps oversee the strained and backlogged claim system that Nicholson now says is unacceptable. The bonuses are determined by the heads of the VA's various divisions, based in part on performance evaluation, and all requests are submitted to Nicholson for final approval. So the top man gave the final approval. In July 2005, the VA stunned Congress by suddenly announcing it faced a $1.3 billion shortfall after failing to take into account the additional cost of caring for veterans injured in Iraq and Afghanistan. The admission, months after the department insisted it was operating within its means and did not need additional money, drew harsh criticism from both parties and many calls for Nicholson's resignation. The investigative arm of Congress, the Government Accountability Office, determined that the VA had used misleading accounting methods and claimed false savings of more than $1.3 billion, apparently because President Bush was not willing at the time to ask Congress for more money. I again remind you, the VA hired 104 Arthur Anderson accountants as executives. So this goes in line with what their methods are.
I think it's so important for people to understand that Arthur Anderson was the company that covered for Enron. Enron was simply lying to the stockholders and lying to the SEC and lying first to the media and saying it was making money hand over fist. It was, you know, just making fabulous profits, and it was all a lie. and it was directly related to Arthur Anderson. So they took the people who cooked the books for Enron, and where are they working now?
They're working for the VA.
Right.
They're all working. 104 of them are working for the VA as executives. And by the way, the Intergovernmental Director's Office in Washington came out of Bush's campaign headquarters in Austin, Texas, when he ran for president the first time. He took the entire campaign staff and moved them into the Intergovernmental Director's Office in Washington. So, you know, you want to talk about patronage, there we are. According to the White House Office of Personnel Management, roughly 3 out of every 4 senior officials of the VA have received some kind of bonus each year. In recent years, the payment has steadily increased from being one of the lowest in government to the most generous. Now, in contrast, just over half the senior officials in the Energy Department in 2005 received an average bonus of $9,064. And across all government agencies, about two-thirds of the employees received bonuses which averaged $13,814. And some of these guys here, a good many of them, have gotten between $33,000 and $42,000 bonuses.
Now, these are the Veterans Administration because they're doing such a good job with the 700,000?
770,000 veterans waiting to get paid. And Steve Ellis, who is the vice president of Taxpayers for Common Sense, said the VA bonuses appeared to reflect a trend in government where performance bonuses were increasingly used to reward loyal associates and longtime employees. Now, put in place shortly after the 1978 Civil Service Reform Act, executive bonuses were designed to increase accountability in government by tying raises more closely to performances. While bonuses can help retain key employees, damage can be done when payments turn into an automatic handout, regardless of performance, Ellis said. Simply put, people who nearly shortchanged our veterans shouldn't get a bonus check at the end of the year. Joe Davis, spokesman for Veterans for Foreign Wars, was one of the nation's largest veterans groups, agreed. His organization is awaiting Nicholson's explanation and saying that the budget shortfall was partly to blame for backlogs and other problems today. And nobody joins the government to get rich, and the bonus may be used as a retention tool to keep the best and brightest, but it should be performance-based an award to be fair and impartial, Davis said. Anything else would be viewed as favoritism, and wait till you hear what we've got now with this thing. Apparently, the people who sat on the committee to award the bonuses awarded most of these bonuses to themselves. Now, Veterans Affairs Secretary Jim Nicholson was testifying in Capitol Hill earlier this month, June the 8th. He was photographed down there talking, and nearly 24 officials who received hefty performance bonuses last year at the Veterans Affairs Department, they also sat on the boards charged with recommending the payments. So they recommended their own bonuses. And documents obtained by the Associated Press raise questions of conflicts of interest or appearances of conflicts in connection with the bonuses, some of which went to senior officials involved in crafting this budget that came up $1.3 billion short and jeopardized veterans' health care. Now, the documents show that 21 of 32 officials who are members of VA performance review boards receive more than $500,000 in payments themselves. And among them, nearly a dozen senior officials who devised the flawed 2005 budget also rewarded, as I said before, was the deputy undersecretary for benefits. So they go on paying this, and
Hold that thought there, Arthur. And I think you have to ask yourself, do you really want bureaucrats sitting on the committees that rewards themselves bonuses for such a fine job in helping our veterans?
It should be an outside committee.
All right, go right ahead, Arthur.
It should be an outside committee. The committee should not be made up of people from the VA. It should be an outside committee that decides who gets a bonus and who doesn't. Now, again, Representative John Hall of New York has introduced legislation that would freeze 2007 VA bonuses for senior politically appointed officers, such as assistant secretaries or deputy undersecretaries, until the agent pairs its disability backlog to under 100,000 cases. And the VA says deputy undersecretaries are career employees, and a committee spokeswoman acknowledged this is the case. And Congressman Hall said it's simply unacceptable that veterans are waiting longer and longer for benefits they desperately need, while senior staff members in charge of bad policy are rewarded so-called performance bonuses. Now, according to guidance by the U.S. Office of Personnel Management, the performance boards have to ensure that bonuses are given based on individual accomplishments cited by supervisors, but the department's overall success. However, 2006 bonus proposals obtained by the Associated Press show that senior officials who received top payments were sometimes credited for achievements that were questionable, if not inaccurate. Also, no mention was made of agency-wide problems. Okay, for here, example, Rita Reed, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Budget, demonstrated the ability to design and implement strategies that maximize employee potential and foster high ethical standards in meeting the organization's missions and goals. While touting her role in launching programs to leverage the VA's buying power as well as collecting $5.1 million in erroneous payments, the proposal does not mention Reed's lead role in crafting the VA's flawed 2005 budget. Months prior to her bonus award, Government Accounting Office investigators determined the VA had used misleading accounting, again, I say Arthur Anderson accountants are working for the VA, to justify health cuts, claiming false savings in part by double-counting savings from volume purchasing and government contracts from year to year. William Feely, Deputy Undersecretary for Health and Operations and Management, made numerous contributions to veterans and the Veterans Health Administration in his role as Deputy Undersecretary. It said he also led system-wide improvements that resulted in a 2.2% decrease in wait times for primary care. Feely received the top bonus and is credited for year-long achievements, even though he did not take the job until February 2006, nearly halfway into the fiscal year. Previously, he was a VA regional director who played a large role in the flawed 2005 budget. Now, regarding veterans' wait time to see doctors, a 2005 report from the VA Inspector General found that VA schedulers routinely put the wrong requested appointment dates into the system, which made reported wait times appear shorter than they really were. The Inspector General has said problems lingered in 2006 despite the VA promises, and they're not any better in 2007. And Ronald Almond, who we mentioned before, Deputy Undersecretary for Benefits, his knowledge of VBA programs and operations and breadth of experience across the VA have contributed greatly to VBA's progress in improving service to veterans. This is unacceptable, Dr. Stan. It's totally unacceptable, and something has got to be done about this VA. And so far, Congress has been totally ineffectual.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and, Chris, it is totally unacceptable the way that they're treating our veterans. I mean, these young men come back, and many of them have brain injuries. Well, there is nothing that they don't have a code for brain injuries. In fact, the most common injury now, if they survive and they've been in a vehicle that's been hit by a roadside bomb, is a permanent brain injury. But as if they don't have the proper code for it, how do you come up with a code? How do you declare them injured? How, of course, can you pay them if you don't have a code for it? I mean, what you're doing is talking about total foolishness. And so many of these young men, they're pushed out of the military. They're pushed in the Veterans Administration. And, of course, they apply for veterans benefits and none are forthcoming. And they apply and they wait and they wait. And what happens to their families? What happens to these people? Because I know you're seeing them, Arthur.
Yeah.
What happens to them?
They wait. They just wait and wait and wait, and many, many times they're forced to go on public assistance. And the states and the local communities are picking up the burden that should be on the federal government. It's being picked up by the states, and if it's picked up at all, it's being picked up by the states, it's being picked up by the local communities. Most of these people end up having to go on public assistance. And it shouldn't be. It really shouldn't be. This is the VA's responsibility. And it's a joint responsibility of the Department of Defense and the VA. And neither one wants to step forward and do something.
Well, now, what's happening as far as their medical care? Let's say they're amputees and they need prostheses. They need rehabilitation. They have a brain injury. They need some sort of counseling. Is that available to them in the hospitals? How long are they allowed to stay in the hospitals?
It's available on a limited basis, Dr. Stan, on a very limited basis. The Department of Defense, again, turned down the request for more PTSD counselors and more equipment to treat people who have got brain injuries. They have turned down the request time and time again.
Now, by PTSD, you mean post-traumatic stress disease.
Yeah, post-traumatic stress disease. They need counselors, and they are something like 3,000 counselors short to take care of the load, and the Department of Defense is supposed to come up with the money, and they haven't come up with the money.
And because now we're finding all these men who were exposed, 100, 150,000,
yeah,
during the first Gulf War, exposed to the sarin. And, of course, you know, when you blow up a bunker full of sarin gas, you might anticipate that that sarin gas would get into the air. They were exposed to it. They knew the direction the sarin gas had gone. They knew that those people who were in his path developed more in the way of symptoms. Now, 17 years later, they're developing degenerative brain disease. What are we doing for that 100,000 veterans?
Practically nothing, Dr. Stan. It's a deplorable situation. And
well, if you wanted to destroy a military, if you wanted to destroy the morale of our youth, if you wanted to destroy the people who would be fighting to defend freedom if it were ever taken away from us here, you couldn't do a better job.
No, we have destroyed it. We've destroyed it, Dr. Stan. The morale has been destroyed with all of this nonsense. You know, they can't come up with the money for counselors. They can't come up with the money for more equipment. They can't come up with the money for more rehabilitation. But they got plenty of money for Halliburton. They got plenty of money for Halliburton. They got plenty of money for the oil companies. But they can't help the veterans who are injured.
And because we have a private army over there. They're the mercenaries. I mean, there are over 100,000 contractors that are there.
Oh, yes.
We don't know how many of them are professional mercenaries, but it's estimated 30,000 or 40,000. They're in factory. They even brought them over to patrol the streets of New Orleans.
Well, most of them have come over from Blackwater in North Carolina.
Right.
My former organization, International Brotherhood of Professional Soldiers, we are now defunct. We haven't been active in this at all.
All right, fine. Well,
after Vietnam, we were pretty much defunct.
Well, no, basically, what is Congress doing?
Not a blessed thing. Not a blessed thing. Your new leader of the House,
Nancy Pelosi,
she goes over to Iraq to try on burqas. We're still talking about a draft action. I personally think a draft action would push this thing right to the limit. If we have a draft action, I'll tell you right now, this would be pushed to the limit, and most people would say, no, you're not taking my kids, and I think that would put an end to the war. We put in a draft action, I think this is going to end the war.
Well, I think what they're going to do is simply take a lot of the illegal immigrants, tell them they'll become citizens after they've served their 2 years, and I think they're going to fill up the roles of our military with a lot of people with no loyalty to America.
Well, they're already
making
this offer.
Hold that role right there. Well, I think we're right ahead.
Okay, let's go to Mr. Anthony Principi. You know, I'm still trying to get this man prosecuted for under RICO charges, under collusion, and under giving quadrupling the contract to his own company while he was the secretary of the VA. And what he did is he actually, his company, QTC, in Diamond Bar, California, is doing the physical evaluations for disabled veterans and also for returning troops from Iraq and Afghanistan. And he had quadrupled the contract to the tune of $1.2 billion. And when they do an evaluation, let me just show you the waste that goes on here and what the VA is. Mr. Principi was finally forced to resign due to the when people found out what was going on with depleted uranium and knowing that Mr. Principi kept things a secret for between 4 to 5 years. And finally, scientific opinion on what was really going on forced Mr. Principi to resign. Now, Mr. Principi, 24 hours before he took office, before he became the secretary, got a $250,000 bonus from his own company, QTC, for quadrupling the contract. And when they do a physical evaluation, the government is billed $495 and change. When that physical evaluation is done by a VA physician in the VA hospital in-house, the government is billed $89.80. So right away, they're 500% higher than having it done at the hospital. And we're trying to have Mr. Principi prosecuted for that. And I spoke to almost everybody. I finally got to Mr. Gonzalez. And Mr. Gonzalez told me he's too high up on the food chain. We can't touch him. And I told Mr. Gonzalez, maybe we'll get him the same time we get you and put the two of you in the same cell. And he says, you know, why are you after Mr. Principi to put him in jail? And I said, it's nothing personal, you know. The only thing I want out of it for myself is for my trivia collection. I'd like a license plate made by him and Stir.
Now, basically, how much did his company get?
Pardon me?
How much did his company get?
His company gets $495 and change for every physical evaluation done.
And how many have they done, or how many will they do?
Thousands. Thousands.
All right, fine. I thought you said something about a million or a billion.
Oh, $1.2 billion.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Arthur Birnbaum. Arthur, before we go on, I want you to get your address, your website out, so if there are veterans out there that need help, they'll know how to get in touch with Veterans for Constitutional Law.
We specialize in trying to help veterans get paid their compensation and their benefits, the same compensation and benefits the VA denies them. We'll go to bat for you and try to help you win it. And we can be reached very easily. My telephone number is 631-474-4261. My name is Arthur Birnbaum. That's Birnklau. I'm executive director. Any one of our counselors can handle your case. And if you decide to take advantage of the new law and use an attorney, we will, at no charge, contact that attorney for you and evaluate him for you and let you know whether you're going to have somebody who is going to work hard on your case or somebody who's just going to take up time and space and just charge you for something that they don't do. You know, finding a good attorney is hard to do, but it's a lot easier if we evaluate them for you. Now, you can contact us at we're Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited, and you can contact us at number 112, 112 Jefferson Avenue. We're in Port Jefferson, New York, 11777. That's Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited. 112 Jefferson Avenue in Port Jefferson, New York, 11777. And any calls made, we are going to respond to from you. And we'd like to know if you're having any problems with the VA. And in most cases, we can help.
All right, fine. Now, what is your telephone number once again?
The best number to reach me at is 631-474-4261. 631-474-4261.
Now, Arthur would say that Mr. Principe, who was head of the VA, or you know, he had this company.
Yeah,
he was affiliated with it. Got contracts for $1.2 billion. Now, that may be just small change to a lot of you out there in the audience, but I think if somebody's working for government and they're a company gets a contract for $1.2 billion, there ought to be an investigation.
There should be, and we don't know why doctors in the VA hospital cannot do these evaluations. We don't know why it has to be given to this company, except that it's Mr. Principe's company. And it's still be, even though Mr. Nicholson is now the secretary of the VA, contracts are still going to Mr. Principe's company.
Well, now you mentioned that Alberto Gonzalez, did you actually talk to him or one of his assistants?
Oh, I finally got to him. It took me many months, but I finally got to him, and he says, we can't touch Principe. He's too high up on the food chain.
That was his exact words?
Exactly.
The food chain.
Yeah, that's his exact words. And I said, you know, maybe we'll put both of you in jail at the same time. I don't think he liked that very much.
No, well, I wouldn't think he would, but he certainly is not a very honorable or honest individual.
No.
And then, of course, it seems to be that this permeates the whole upper echelon of our government today, because we've lost our moral foundation as a nation.
Oh, terrible. Just terrible.
All right, fine. Well, now, in the past, there's been a few congressmen who were willing to champion the rights of the veterans. Nothing today?
There have been a few congressmen. You've got a very nice lady out in Washington State in the Senate, Patty Murray. She goes to bat for veterans. She's been all out, and we've had a new fellow here, Jim McDermott of Washington State again, and here's a little to do on the May 26th on the floor of Congress. Jim McDermott, Democrat of Washington, rescues some history from the memory hole and puts Iraq into context. And this is very similar to what you were talking about, Dr. Stan. And McDermott said, it's always been all about the oil. Now, after a week that saw Democrats cave into the White House in the worst possible way in Iraq, we thought this speech of McDermott's offered on the House floor last Wednesday was worth highlighting. In a brief 5 minutes commentary, McDermott does something almost unheard of in Washington. He looks at an issue in its larger historical context instead of pretending it just sprung up overnight like mushrooms after a rainfall. And here's the way the conversation went, Mr. Speaker. This president and vice president have vowed to repeat the mistakes of history, and they've put into motion a plan to do just that in Iran, even as the House is about to send the president a box of blank checks for Iraq against the will of the American people. Now, this history is worth knowing. In 1953, the United States and United Kingdom launched Operation Ajax, a covert CIA operation to destabilize and remove the democratically elected government of Iran, including then Prime Minister Mohammad Mossadegh. Why? Oil, of course. Under Mossadegh, the Iranian government decided to reclaim Iran's rightful ownership of the national oil treasure, which had been exclusively controlled by the British, who were taking 85% of the profits. And, oh, by the way, the UK also kept books secret, merely telling Iran what its 15% take was. As soon as Mossadegh began to reclaim Iran's oil treasure, it was all over. Operation Ajax was set into motion, and the U.S. Embassy in Tehran provoked phony internal Iranian dissent, while the English engineered an Iranian financial crisis by orchestrating a global boycott of Iranian oil. We brought down the Iranian government and we installed the Shah. For two decades, we propped up the Shah against the will of the Iranian people, and it was all about controlling Iran, and it still is today. Today, ABC News is reporting exclusively that the president has authorized a new covert CIA plot to bring down the Iranian government. I ask unanimous consent to enter into the record the journalism produced by Chief Investigative Reporter Brian Ross and Richard Esposito of ABC News. This is their lead sentence in the story. The CIA has received secret presidential approval to mount a covert black operation to destabilize the Iranian government. Current and former officials in the intelligence community tell the blotter on ABCNews.com. We're back in 1953, and that worked out so very well. Of course, the vice president wanted to invade Iran, that's Mr. Cheney, so we can be sure he'll spin new tales of fear in coming days to keep his preferred opinion invasion very much alive. The president knows only one way, my way or the highway. His vice president knows only one way, invade and seize control of what you want. And he wants the oil treasure of Iraq and Iran to become wholly subsidiaries of the Western oil companies he so favors. With Iraq in civil war, the president has authorized a secret plan to repeat the doomed mistake of history in Iran. How many billions of reconstruction money for Iraq will be siphoned off for the deconstruction of Iran? The American people are virtually shouting at us to pay attention and get our soldiers out of Iraq now. Vast sums of U.S. taxpayer money are flowing into Iraq, and billions of U.S. dollars are now missing. The special inspector for Iraq reconstruction told the San Antonio newspaper last week that corruption in Iraq is endemic and debilitating. But Prime Minister al-Maliki has granted ministers and former ministers immunity from prosecution by Iraq's Commission on Public Integrity. Public integrity, oh God. And in turn, the ministers can shield their own employees from prosecution. And a government that's been told by this president and vice president to pass an oil law that transfers control and profits to Western oil companies, this is just like the good old days in Iran in 1953. Overthrowing Iran in 1953 was all about oil. Invading Iraq was all about oil. And the new secret plot against Iran is all about oil. Now, oil is the only benchmark this president and vice president want. They will keep American soldiers fighting and dying until an oil law is passed in Iraq that gives Western oil companies control of the spigot. And it's now time to unmask the latest doom plot to overthrow Iran and pass time to get our soldiers out of Iraq. And nothing less than protecting our troops is acceptable. Thank you. And I'll tell you, I'm very impressed by this Congressman McDermott of Washington State, Dr. Stan.
I think that's a very interesting fact. If you could send me a copy of that.
I'll be glad to.
Or maybe if you could fax that to me tomorrow, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, I'll get that out to you.
All right, and ladies and gentlemen, as you know,
I think I have your fax number. Hold on.
Well, you can go get it afterwards.
Okay.
But I think for our listeners, pray that we do not go into Iran. If we do go into Iran, it could mean a war with the entire Muslim world. When you start a war, you never know how it's going to end. Where is the outcry from our religious leaders? I will tell you, they're all in favor of it. They've been invited back to the White House to meet with the president, and our major Christian evangelical leaders are all supporting the war. Where are our conservative leaders? They're all in favor of the war. Where are our Republican leaders? Every one of them is in favor of the war. I mean, where is there any logic on what's going on today? And if you're not concerned about the fact that we are about to make the greatest mistake any great nation has ever made, why, you just don't understand what's going on. This could well lead to the collapse of our monetary system, the impoverishment of our people, the loss of our currency is the reserve currency of the world, and a serious military defeat for America in the Middle East. So whatever the consequences are, it will happen if the good people are not involved. And I would simply ask, what are you going to do about it? And what are you going to do about the veterans who have already come home, badly crippled, who cannot get care? And believe me, this is endemic in the situation today. And if we expand the war in the Middle East, there may be tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands more, who will be injured unnecessarily, and men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. Arthur, go ahead.
Now, this is the last thing in the world we need, Dr. Stan, is an invasion of Iran and getting involved in this. This is the last thing we need. And I want to also say that I'm a little sorry, but I'm glad to see Cindy Sheehan getting out of this. Cindy Sheehan was the bereaved mother who lost her son in Iran. In Iraq, and was in the newspaper. U.S. anti-war mother ends protest. Cindy Sheehan, bereaved mother who became a figurehead for the U.S. anti-war movement, is abandoning her fight after growing disenchanted with the campaign. She's camped outside of President Bush's ranch since 2005, demanding a meeting over the death of her son in Iraq, but announcing the end of her campaign. She also hit out at the Democrats, an anti-war campaigners who put personal egos above peace and human life. She said she had sacrificed her health, her marriage, and her finances. In a letter to the Daily Kos website titled Good Riddance, Attention Whore, a reference to the abuse she said she has suffered, Ms. Sheehan said, "I'm going to take whatever I have left and go home. I'm going to go home and be a mother to my surviving children and try to regain some of what I've lost. This is what the war machine has done to me." Cindy Sheehan became a poster girl for the U.S. anti-war movement after she set up her protest camp outside the president's ranch in Crawford, Texas in August 2005. She says she spent all the money from the survivor's benefits, paid for her son's death, and everything she has earned from speaking and book fees, and that she owed large hospital bills. I've been called every despicable name that small minds can think of and had my life threatened many times. She and her son, Casey, who died in Baghdad April 2004, was killed by his own country, which is beholden to and run by a war machine that even controls what we think. Casey died for a country which cares more about who will be the next American idol, Cindy Sheehan. Casey died for a country which cares more about who will be the next American idol than how many people will be killed in the next few months while Democrats and Republicans play politics with human lives. It is so painful to me to know that I brought into this system for many years, and Casey paid the price for that allegiance. I failed my boy, and that hurts the most. Ms. Sheehan criticized the U.S. anti-war movement for often putting personal egos first. It's hard to work for peace when the very movement that it's named after has so many divisions. She said one-time allies among the Democratic Party had turned on her when she no longer limited her protests over the Iraq war to the Republican Party. The U.S. will rapidly descend into a fascist corporate wasteland, she said, if alternatives to this corrupt two-party system are not found. Ms. Sheehan said she was resigning as the face of the U.S. anti-war movement, and she said she'd never give up trying to help people in the world who are harmed by the empire of the good old U.S. of A., but I'm finished working in or outside the system. And,
well, I really think that, first, the people have to understand that the pro-war and the anti-war movement are both controlled by the same people. I mean, Cindy was simply trying to work within the system, not realizing, of course, that the Democrats were going to push the war just as much as the Republicans. But until you look and go up and ask yourselves, who's putting all the money up for the anti-war movement? Who's coordinating the demonstrations? And you'll find it's exactly, if you get to the very basis of this, it's the same people who are pushing the war. You want to always have a controlled opposition. That's just what we have. Arthur, why don't you wrap up the program for us right now?
Okay.
Well, we'll give you about 1 minute now and then a couple of minutes after the break. Go ahead.
Okay. Hold on one moment.
All right. Okay. Will you just hold off and we'll put you on when we get back here. And we've got Bruce calling from Spokane. Maybe we'll take his question during the break here. Bruce, hi. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right.
Did you have a question or comment?
Yes. I just want to tell Art that I'm one of those veterans that have been waiting for years for the Veterans Department to acknowledge the claims and injuries that you received serving in the military. I've been to Kuwait and Iraq and Panama and Honduras and Korea and all sorts of interesting places over the years, and I'm one of those guys that has piles of records, but they just seem to not be able to recognize what is in front of their face.
And they keep denying whatever you send them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is beyond maddening.
Well, I think, Bruce, what you have to understand is war is a racket. Have you read...
Yes, I have. I read that book called War is a Racket by the World War I general that talked about the marketing of the war. Yes, I have.
Edwin Butler, yes.
I think that you have to help us get the word out that they're using our people as Praetorian Guard and then casting them aside like an old shoe.
And just like you, that people scoff at you, but you just keep on a-plugging away.
Well, thank you, and please encourage people up there in Spokane to listen to our program and to help Arthur as well.
Arthur was going to
send me something about your case if you can. The address that I gave here. If you send me, do you have a representation of any kind?
Well, I'm just going through the VSO, the Veterans Service Office.
Oh, that's the worst place you can go.
Well, it appears to be so because I've been to four different ones, and they just seem to forget who you are the moment you walk out.
They're not on your side. They're on the side of the VA.
Well, they sure sound good when you show up there and talk to them.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Well, why don't you get in touch with Arthur? He's helped a lot of people. Give your telephone number one more time, Arthur.
I've got it down here, 631-474-4261.
All right.
Okay, and if you can send me something briefly on your case, I'll be glad to look at it, and we don't charge you anything.
Well, do you want me to get in touch with you by phone or what?
Get in touch with me. Write me something about your case.
All right.
At the same address that I left.
Okay, I don't have the address.
Okay, it's 112 Jefferson Avenue in Port Jefferson, New York.
Port or Port?
Port, P-O-R-T.
Okay.
And the zip code is 11777. And send me anything pertinent to your case, anything that you think is important.
Hey, we're out of time. Thank you very much,
Port Jefferson,
Bruce.
New York. Okay, thanks.
Thank you very much, Arthur. It's always a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stan, and God bless you for the work you do.
It was a great program tonight. I really appreciate it. And you hang in there. Keep trying to help our veterans. Oh, somebody's got to be concerned about them. Good night. God bless.
Take care now.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan. If you'd like to know what they do to our veterans, you should get our four-tape set, Vaccine A. The story of the experimental vaccine they used on our troops in the first Gulf War. We need to get our four-tape set on the Gulf War illness. The four-tape set on the anthrax vaccine. You need to get the book Project Daylily, written by Dr. Garth Nicholson, one of the country's leading scientists. And, of course, it's the story of how they repeatedly tried to murder both he and his wife because they were getting too close to the experimental diseases that they were unleashing on the American people. That's Project Daylily. all of these and so many other items available. To get information on them, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Go to our webpage, and Chris, you can look at the items we have. We actually have Major General Smedley Butler's article on War is a Racket. It's one of my newsletters. Pull it down and read it. Understand that they're using our servicemen as guinea pigs, as cattle. They're destroying their lives. You need to get the DVD, Beyond Treason, and with that you get a free CD-ROM that tells you, gives you thousands of pages of government documents on how they're poisoning our men with depleted uranium. You need to get the Rockefeller Committee report. Came out of the Veterans Administration in 1994 over the name of J. Rockefeller, about how they have used our servicemen as guinea pigs, and the public as well. But it's an excellent report. I contacted the woman who wrote it, tried to get her on our programs, and she was quite afraid to come on. But it's an excellent report. We call it the Rockefeller Committee Report. Actually, it's a report from the Veterans Administration. Understand that very little is it appears to be. And your job is to begin to learn, to question, to try to understand that behind everything going on today are powerful, dark, spiritual forces. You need to watch or read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, to get our new DVD, Forbidden Secret, to get the 4-tape set or CD set, The Secret Behind the Secret, the very professionally done DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and or Riddles in Stone, The Secret Destiny of America. That is why we're really fighting in Iraq and going to invade Iran. Yes, it has to do with oil, but that's not the real reason. The real reason is laid out in our February 2004 newsletter. That's the February 2004 newsletter, available on the internet at radioliberty.com. If you don't have the ability to pull it down, if you call us, we'll send you a free copy. 1-800-544-8927. We do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us as we reach out 5 hours every day by radio, by shortwave, by internet, and certainly by the other means of electronic communication, trying to educate people across America, across the world, about the spiritual nature of the battle in which we're engaged. And then please pray for America, pray for revival, pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, when I hope my voice is better, may the Lord be with you. Good night. God bless you.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.